Hello, patrons, and welcome to another episode of Reckless Adjacent.
Yay!
We haven't done one of these in a while, actually, so I think this is what, our second one, actually?
It is still an episode of Reckless Adjacent.
Yeah, for sure. And for today's episode, we have myself, Jonathan, we have Nathan over there.
Hello!
And we have Steve.
Hi.
So just the three of us hanging out in a room together playing cool games.
Don't read into this. This will make sense.
Yeah.
It's not that Sophie and David are off the podcast.
Yeah.
Or that we are off the podcast and have started our new own side thing.
Patreon only is now just the three of us.
Yep.
And like the rest of us are the main feed.
Yes. And Reckless Attack will just be Sophie and David moving forward. Sorry you had to hear it like this.
Right. Due to creative differences.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Us being creative and them being different.
Correct. But today we are playing a fun superhero game that I found called Anyone Can Wear the Mask. And it is written by Jeff Stormer, who has his own podcast called Party of One.
Indeed. One of the bigger and older, I think, tabletop role-playing game podcasts out there at the moment.
And he wrote this game. It is based off of another game called Beyond the Rift by Dee Pennyway. And this is just a really cool game, I think, because it is a storytelling game about a hero, a villain, and the city, or, you know, the space that they occupy and sort of inhabit. And as a result, it's a three-player game. And who do we have here? Three players.
Hey.
Wow.
Oh, look at that.
Sometimes the math just works.
Before we get too far into the game, I do just want to kind of read through the intro to this, because there's a cool little blurb on the front of this game. So it says, "This is an imaginary story, which may never happen, but which then again may, about someone with great power who chose to use that power only for the good of all. It tells of their final triumph, their ultimate showdown with their great and terrible adversary, and of the city that believed in them, and the people that they saved, and the people they couldn't. We tell their story and celebrate their successes, knowing they are only a myth. There is no superpowered hero coming to save us. We have only our city. We have only ourselves. We must be our own heroes. This story is an imaginary story, but it doesn't have to be." So ultimately, this is a superhero game about a superhero who will win at the end of the day. But it documents their adventures and their struggles and the people that they couldn't save along the way. There's a whole section on what the tone of the game is, and it's saying this is an emotionally challenging game, the hero will fail and people will be lost, but they will still win in the end. So within the three roles that we have to play here today, we have the hero, who is the ultimate victor, we have the villain, who is standing in their way, and then we have the city, who represents all of the different people that they save or don't save, the different areas that they can visit, that kind of stuff. The game also talks a lot about safety mechanics. So being kind of an emotionally charged game, there's a big section in this game on specific safety mechanics. And the ones that they discuss in the game are lions and veils. And then they also have the X cards like we have here on Reckless Attack. We've talked about lions and veils as a group already, so I'm not going to bring it up here, but just as a reminder, the X card, if anyone wants to stop the game for any reason, X card. There's also something in here that's really cool called an O card, which I've never heard about. But the O card is just like, hey, if you want to explore this scene further, you can signal to the party that like, hey, I'm interested in this. Let's O card this and just keep talking about it. Keep exploring it. Keep seeing what comes up, which I think is a really cool mechanic.
It is.
So with that, we get to the actual fun part of the game.
Woo!
Oh.
Yeah, not that the introduction...
Already?
Yeah, I know, right? The game part of the game. Not that the introduction wasn't fun, but I've told Nathan and Steve not to look at anything.
Right, we have been told one thing, and that is to know nothing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But,
and I'll tell you, I'm an expert and we not knowing anything.
We excelled in that role.
Right. Yes. So this is the first time that they've seen this game. I've looked at it a few times. I'm also new to this myself, but we'll be figuring out as we go. The first thing that we need to decide are the three main characters. Who is the hero, the villain, and the city? So I'm the city.
I need to figure this out.
But I'm doing this one.
And as the city, I have assigned the following roles.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, so the city...
You can pick your role, but you might be wrong.
Yeah.
We need to figure this out. And by that, I mean you need to figure out how to listen to me tell you what you're doing.
So the city is kind of like, not the GM, but just the neutral arbiter of the game.
The rest of the world.
Exactly. And in the game, it says, you are, well, you're everyone. You're ordinary people, extraordinary people, other heroes, other villains, people trying to live their lives. But we also have the hero and the villain. And I don't have a good way to decide, or rather, do either of you have a particular role that you would want to inhabit for today?
I don't think I have a particular preference. I'm like 55-45, kind of wanting to be the hero, but as Eternal GM, it's very easy for me to flip the switch into like, villain time.
Yeah.
So unless, Steve, you had a strong preference, we could either do that way or roll off, baby.
Honestly, I would like to try out the villain.
Yeah?
I kind of wanted to do that.
Okay.
Mostly because I feel I don't get to use my maniacal laugh as often as I would like to, just to monologue and laugh.
Yes.
It seems like that's the vibe I'm getting
right
today.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
perfect.
This nice sunny afternoon, you want to really just
I want to darken everything and bring shadows to the city.
Mm-hmm. And I want to cry.
Yeah. Love that. Perfect. I really appreciate that both of you have thought about this at least a little bit beforehand. So we have
admitted. Oh, shoot. We had one job.
Right.
Well, we didn't look at anything.
That's true. That's true. But we have Nathan as the hero and Steve as the villain. One question I want to pose to the group is we want to build the city together. And the first question is, how big is the city? Are we talking a small town, a bustling borough, a major metropolis, the whole wide world, or to infinity and beyond? What is the scale?
Oh, man. I'm kind of leaning like a classic metropolis.
Uh-huh.
That's just like such the superhero setting.
Yeah.
I've never played a superhero game before. I love superheroes and like comics and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I've never once played a superhero comic. So I think I'm leaning metropolitan area.
Sure.
But also then you said to infinity and beyond. And it's like,
You want to go to other galaxies?
What if we did
multiverse?
What if we were, what if I was like.
So are you talking like the quote unquote city is the solar system or a group of solar systems?
Yeah, or like, again, or like multiverses where it's like, cool, I'm Doctor Strange and I'm like bopping betweens and you're like the literal devil.
That would be interesting if we have a multiverse and the city is the city in every multiverse, but you as the hero are to protect the city in every multiverse. And I, as the villain, I'm there to destroy the city in every multiverse.
I think we need to start
more smaller.
As the first superhero foray, as much as that is when we do part two.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is when the hero wins, it splits the multiverse, and then that's the sequel.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. With Nathan there, I like the idea of having like a metropolis type of area.
Okay.
But as someone who I love superhero RPGs.
Yeah, like, okay, awesome.
I absolutely love them. So I've played a whole bunch of them. I like the idea of the starting small with the neighborhood hero.
Yes.
So even though you're in a metropolis setting, maybe you're only covering a neighborhood or a handful of neighborhoods in the big city.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this game really captures that really well too, because even if the scale is a big city or the whole world or whatever, you're really only focused on 4 or 5 different areas that you change between and different things happen in, but you're not literally trying to like come up with a dozen different cities and whatever. So I think this captures that idea really well. So today we are playing in a major metropolis. What do we call this metropolis? And also just, what are we imagining this as? Is this just Chicago or is this New York? Is it Omaha? Is it?
For me, there's like two comic cities that I'm very interested in. And one of them is Superman Metropolis.
Yes.
There's certainly crime and there's like some normal city problems, but mostly in the art, it's very like bright and sunshiny and like, and then there's a monster rampaging. Or it is not just Gotham, but it is, what is it? When Dick Grayson, the first Robin, goes off and becomes Nightwing, they give him his own city to patrol that is not Gotham. And it is just the even darker, crimier Gotham that he is. It's like,
it's Bloodhaven.
Yes, it is Bloodhaven. That is what it's called. Exactly. So that's the extra dark, you know, kind of intense city. Gotham is obviously very good, too. But I'm definitely interested in kind of one of those like polar opposites of sure. like, oh, no, bright glistening city that is being protected, or like, oh, it's very dark. It's blah, blah, blah. But also like New York is good yeah. too, you know, like whatever fantasy New York where it's like, there's good, there's bad.
Okay, maybe we even don't even start with a city. We start with a hero, because that might help us understand like what kind of city this hero is part of. So we're going to skip around a little bit. First off, the hero. So we've decided we're in some kind of major metropolis. The first question for creating the hero is asking the question, how powerful are you? And there's a couple different options here. There's street level vigilante. There's friendly neighborhood hero, aka Spider-Man. There's gifted with great power. And then the final option is a living god. On the scale of like Marvel comparisons, are we like at a Hawkeye level? Are we at, I don't know, Iron Man to
the
me?
The Beyonder?
Yeah.
Where are we here? Galactus.
Yeah. How you're just like, I'm Galactus. Look at this little city.
I am once again pulled by like, oh, well, I like this comic and I like,
I like
this
Spider-Man.
Comic.
I love Spider-Man. Yeah.
One of my favorite comic runs of all time, and this is not like a unique statement because it's like one of the most well-liked comic runs ever, is Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, which is cool. Essentially what the TV show was like largely based off of.
Yeah.
And yes, he is just a dude and is like absolutely a kind of a loser, has commitment issues, has like ex-partners coming in and out of the story constantly,
but Olympic level archer,
right? Yeah. Exactly. And like he tries hard is his superpower, and also he shoot arrow good.
Yeah.
And that is always like very, very interesting to me for certain, where it's like when you're just a dude trying your best is always very interesting. Steve, you mentioned like neighborhood level kind of thing. That's Daredevil, that's Spider-Man, that's whatever. And that's like a higher power scale than that. My brain keeps wanting to be like, yeah, but what if I was like Doctor Strange? Wouldn't that be cool? And then it's like, Nathan, you play Dungeons and Dragons every week. Don't use magic. Just leave it. You don't. It's fine. Just leave it alone.
You don't have to.
So I'm going to say friendly neighborhood hero.
Okay.
But probably on the like kind of straddling the line between just a dude who shoots a bow and arrow, but also like I'm not Spider-Man powerful.
Yeah. It's got like a little extra in the supernatural or a little extra in the the flavor.
There is power there. It's not just like, oh man, really good hand-eye coordination.
And that also brings up the question of where do your powers come from? So as you're thinking about this just a dude with some extra little bits, does their power come from technology? Their ancestry, like, what are you imagining this person as? Where do they come from?
I think I'm going to go a classic, semi-tragic, like, accident.
Yeah.
You know, kind of situation. So I'm going to say science.
Okay.
But I don't know that I was necessarily, like, the person who invented it.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever it is. So science, technology will kind of feel it out.
Sure.
But I think something happened to me.
Sure.
And now my DNA is different.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please.
What if you were just a, like, somebody working for something like the EPA, you know, Environmental Protection Agency, or some other, like, low-level government-type job, and they had developed something to either clean up the air, clean up the water, or whatnot, and something went wrong, and you got splashed or coated in whatever this thing was?
I'm into that. I'm just thinking.
I was imagining it as like you got into a car accident and you had to have all your limbs reconstructed.
Oh, like the $6 million
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
actually, $6 million man today's would be like a $6 billion man. But you know.
See, I was thinking of like I was the lab assistant.
Okay.
To some sort of like, we are creating the energy of the future.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
This is the like self-sustaining power that we need to move into the, I don't know, 23rd century, whenever this is taking place. And something went wrong and my mentor died or was horribly scarred or whatever, something that I feel very guilty about. And now I am saddled with some sort of powers that I don't fully understand.
And a possible villain or
I was leaving options, sprinkling options open.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and that also goes right into the next question of like, what exactly can you do? Because it'll be helpful to picture what like your special abilities are or what your powers are in order for us to like understand what can threaten you and how you kind of interact with the city.
I just, the issue is that I just keep coming up with D&D powers, where I was literally was like, okay, so sustainable energy, it's great, it's classic, but like it's pretty big. Is there like a smaller version of that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, what's a big problem? Agriculture, great. So it's like maybe it's a compound that helps grow plants, and I made a druid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So again, as someone who has played a lot of these games, there's a lot of like subcategories you can kind of go into. So for instance, let's say this was something for solar power, harnessing solar energy more efficiently. Maybe all your powers then are based on light.
Yeah, for sure.
And so you can you have your light beam, or you can just, you know, light up an area, or maybe it's a combination of light and darkness where you can remove the light from an area or manipulate it that way.
Yeah, I like that. I like solar power as a idea.
And while we're trying to figure out what specifically Nathan is what his character can do, I'm going to sprinkle in more questions, because there's a lot of questions that we can ask in order to create this character. But the last question is, how do you help your city? So are you a shield of the people, protecting them so they can thrive? Are you the icon of the city that people look up to for inspiration? Are you the smiling face, a friend to those who need it? Or are you the Dark Knight that avenges the injustice that they suffer? So maybe understanding like how your character fits into the city and what their role is will help kind of shape what their powers look like.
Dark Knight with light powers is not real.
I don't know. It could go a lot of ways. Yeah.
Oh, then you could call yourself Nightlight.
We can't make those jokes. We've already right. cut that out.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, so I think I like the inspiration, you know, kind of vibe. I always really enjoy the duality of a street level hero. Their actual life is filled with turmoil and drama and whatever that is.
Yep.
But that's not what the people on the street see. That's not the part they play in kind of the like public eye. You feel terrible, you failed, you've done all these other things, and yet then someone still is like, holy shit, it's Nightlight.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Like, hey, you saved me. You saved my hot dog stand last week.
Right.
That saved my life. And then it's like, well, yeah, I guess Becky's cheating on me, but I did save that hot dog stand. And so that's pretty cool too.
Right.
You know, like I think look up to icon / inspiration, even if it is just only in this like little neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure. I like that too. They need flaws in order to kind of make them seem more real.
If you want to go something like annoying but minor that you were trying to fix, like noise pollution, so you could have like Sonic abilities.
That's kind of fun. Sonic is interesting.
I have only dumb ideas in that you got splashed with hair regrower and now your hair grows out real fast so you can control it.
Right.
I'm like, what about, you know, different energy types?
But the joke's on you. It's H-A-R-E and not H-A-I-R.
Yes.
So you actually just launch rabbits.
Well,
how comic book like Superman or Spider-Man versus comic book The Tick do you want to go?
Yeah, right.
What's
Squirrel
the
Girl. Come on, but with bunnies.
Yeah.
I think what it is that I'm trying to put a lot of pressure on myself to like come up with just an entirely new superhero with totally different powers that have never been done before. And it's like, they've been doing this for 100 years, my dude.
Right.
Like, that's not that many. I'm sure you could come up with different versions of them, but they've done it all.
We've all grown up in pop culture. We've all been influenced by the same superheroes. We're making Spider-Man, but just different. We get it.
Yeah. So what I'm kind of leaning right now is maybe it's just teleportation.
Okay.
You know, but it's limited. So it's kind of just where I can see within a certain range or something.
Yep.
One of the things that's interesting to me about teleportation is that it is very powerful, obviously, but is not super strength. You can solve a huge number of things with super strength and durability, whereas like teleportation is like you can still get your ass beat.
Yeah, because I'm imagining as like, you can teleport, but that doesn't mean you're any stronger or faster or whatever. You're just a normal person.
Yeah.
But you can move around really more easily.
Exactly. I think that's maybe what I'm going to go for.
Cool. Love that. And like as we play the game too, I'm sure you'll add on to it. You'll come up with all kinds of other cool ways to use that power. Do you have a sense of a name or your secret identity, or do you not have a secret identity? You're just
That's kind of fun.
Secret or public, I guess, is a good question.
Displacement is kind of a fun word to play with. Or
let me just look up Google synonyms for teleport.
Telebro.
Telebro.
Ooh, the dislocator.
Oh, no.
Wow. That sounds more like a...
Yeah.
Yeah. The apparator.
Yeah. Strongest match to teleport. Beam.
I saw that too. It's like, come on, man.
Beam, man.
Jaunt is a fun word.
Ooh, yeah.
Again, I don't know what to do with it, but like jaunt.
I love jaunt as such a character name.
It's such a good word. It's very evocative.
Yeah.
For like the thing that a teleporter does. So I don't know. Again, I don't know how to turn that into a name other than the Jaunter, which is like not.
I was literally just your superhero name is Jaunt. Like,
oh, that's true. Like, yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of into that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say like Jaunt or the Jaunt or something along those lines. I'll keep playing around with it.
Actually, my brain just kind of went, of course, your full name is Jonathan.
No. Unfortunately, my name now has to be John something.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Because like it
John T.
We are playing in...
John T, yeah.
Right. We're playing in a superhero world. So my name is...
Ooh, John Strider.
Yep, that's what it is.
Okay.
With an H or just J-O-N?
J-O-H-N.
Okay, that's pretty good. John Strider. I love this character. John Strider, the teleporting friendly neighborhood hero, who is the icon that people look up to for inspiration. And we don't have a city name yet. We do need to come up with some kind of city.
Okay, so vibe-wise.
Yeah.
I am now leaning... a little, not so much on the Metropolis side of things. And it doesn't need to be all the way to Bloodhaven.
Yeah.
But somewhere, yeah, in like comic book New York.
Yeah.
Where there are distinct neighborhoods and boroughs and whatever.
Sure.
And it is a little bit on the grimier side, even though it's not 1980s edgy, is kind of the vibe that I'm thinking of.
So it's a little dirty. It's a little like, not run down, but it's got its fair share of issues.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe it was once like a city of progress. This is where all the scientists are. This is where the art is. This is where whatever. And then the decades wore on. Maybe something happened, or maybe just that's not how it panned out. Or the recession hit or whatever.
So keeping with that, I'm imagining that whatever the city name is, it's New something.
Right. Oh, cool. Yep.
New Gutterton. No.
I think teleportation noir is kind of a fun combo.
What do you think of New Bastion?
Cool. Love it.
Done.
John Strider, the superhero in New Bastion. And we'll come up with specific areas in New Bastion as we play. And I do want to talk a little bit about the villain as well. Because the villain, we don't really have so many questions to create the villain. But as we're playing, maybe that'll kind of form in your head, Steve.
Sure.
I'll talk a little bit about the villain. Because just reading from the game, it says, you're here to destroy. Maybe it's because you crave power, maybe it's out of spite for the hero, maybe it's part of a larger plan. But this city has to burn, and you're going to be the one that does it. So as the villain, you will describe the kinds of threats the hero will overcome, you will track their injuries and setbacks, and you will be rolling dice to determine whether or not the hero can save everyone. You will keep a list of the hero's failures, so that you can recite them during the uprising, which is a phase of the game.
Perfect.
Yep. And you will ultimately be defeated at the hands of the hero. So you're in the background trying to wear the hero down, bring them low, show them how little they really mean to the people of New Bastion. But ultimately, you will be defeated and the hero will save the day.
As is tradition.
As is tradition. So this game has a couple mechanics, and it's primarily around drawing cards and rolling dice. In order for us to determine what the scene is, where the heroes are at, what they're doing, we draw cards. And depending on what card we draw, we'll end up either in somewhere in imminent danger, somewhere peaceful, somewhere personal to the hero, just different spots in the city where something can happen. And when we get to that, Steve, our villain, will describe what the threat is, and he'll also be rolling the dice to determine how well they performed under pressure. And then we, as a group, will kind of describe what that looks like for John Strider, our hero, and what the end result of that is.
Since we are a street-level, neighborhood-level kind of person, I realized, like, oh, I should have, like, a neighborhood.
A
neighborhood,
yeah,
specifically.
Right, yeah.
Lyons Park, I think.
Okay.
Lyons Park
okay.
is, I think, what I'm doing. And I think, specifically, it used to be a pretty decent spot, probably a little bit lower income. Rent was low, I should say.
Yeah, sure.
And then the experiment where I got my powers happened, and it really just totally messed up the neighborhood, essentially. So, you know, there's still people living there. There was some rebuilding efforts, but like funding ran out. Uh-huh. Enthusiasm was, you know, kind of low.
People moved on.
You're right, exactly. The attention kind of moved on after several years, and they never really finished kind of putting the facelift on it.
Yeah.
And I also think that no one really publicly knows what happened, what was being worked on specifically. Maybe it was like the government stepped in and was like, no, we can't tell anyone that there was just illicit teleportation experiments happening here.
A big cover up.
Right, essentially. And so it's like, cool, there was some sort of crackpot thing.
Yeah.
Was making weapons, still bad, whatever. But I know that like I was a part of the thing that destroyed a huge part of the neighborhood.
Yes.
And now I spend my life
atoning for that.
Essentially atoning for that. And no one but me knows about it.
Okay. I'm also wondering, too, so, like, you don't want to reveal your part in what happened to Lions Park, but you're also the icon that people look up to.
Exactly.
So that dichotomy, that duality is also just, ugh, that's good. That's good.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Tumblestrom's Tome of Unicorns. This new book by Lucas Anderson offers 10 brand new unicorns and unicorn-themed stat blocks for 5th edition, including the Goopy Oozicorn, the Primeval Unicorn, and the Unicorn of Majesty. Each is accompanied with lore and plot hooks to inspire GMs using them for their campaign. There's also a section of unique magic items like the Bow of Fecundity. That's fun to say. Plus, all that is set to super evocative rock and roll zine art. Tumblestrom's Tome of Unicorns is a very flavorful and easy-to-use supplement and can be found right now on the Dungeon Masters Guild. That's TUMBLESTRUM apostrophe S, Tome of Unicorns. Available now on the Dungeon Masters Guild.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show, as well as our new Reckless of Snacks series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. All right, we'll go ahead and start with a day in the life. I'm going to draw a card from this deck of cards, and depending on what I get, that'll help determine where we end up and what our first scene is. So I have drawn the Eight of Spades. By virtue of being a number, we're already going to start somewhere in imminent danger.
I mean, that's how all good superhero stories start, though.
Right. And also, because it's a spade, John Strider here is going to be out of his element. His strong suit is the diamond. He is an icon that people look up to. But when we draw a spade from the deck of cards, he is in a place that he is not as familiar, or that people actively dislike him, or just he's not where he's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple different roles here. I'm going to say that your work has taken you to a fancy hoity-toity party on the 50th floor one of the biggest skyscrapers in downtown. You're here for any number of reasons. Maybe it's because your boss invited you, a friend invited you, you're here to steal something. You tell me why you're here in this party. But it's bustling. You're here with all the rich and powerful, and it's uncomfortable. it's not usually where you want to be. You know, your home in Lions Park is not the most glamorous part. So being in all this high society stuff is not your usual scene.
This is a political fundraiser for a local, like, city council member who's, like, a bigwig. I got the invite because one of my childhood friends is in the DA's office.
Okay.
And I have known this guy for forever. He's, like, my closest friend, of course, does not know about my secret identity. He was just like, oh, hey, like, man, John's depressed all the time. I should invite him to something.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess I'll invite him to this fancy party, essentially.
Yeah, like a little gala, a little fundraiser.
Right, exactly. So, like, John is in, like, a rented tux, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, looking very uncomfortable.
Okay.
He does not belong here even a little bit. And he is, like, being either ignored or stared at by the 1% of this city. Of which, again, it's not a particularly wealthy city, at least not anymore, but the people who are here and are rich are really rich.
You've already been asked multiple times if you can refill people's drinks.
Yes, like, absolutely, I have done it one time.
Yeah. I need to come up with a name for this location.
I want it to be like something like the Hancock Building.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like
the Pinnacle Building?
Yeah, perfect.
Two on the nose.
Sure.
Ooh. It's called the Pinnacle Building because it used to be where the city newspaper was.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Tribune Tower kind of version of things. And it used to be there for decades and decades and was just known as the Pinnacle Tower.
Yeah.
But funding cuts, like all this other stuff, if it exists, it is now moved into like offices, you know, like in a slum. And no one works in the office because it's cheaper to have everyone work remotely.
Okay, but it's still got a little bit of that glitz and glamour that would attract people, but it's far from the heyday that it used to have.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Pinnacle Tower.
Or it's actually, it might be even more glitz and glam because it is no longer functional.
Okay,
like, it is no longer serving its civic purpose.
Yeah.
It has now been taken over by capitalism and the wealthy, and so now it is like... There are galas here. There are penthouses.
And mostly because it's one of the tallest buildings in the city.
Yeah.
So you just have that view.
Yeah, exactly.
So, John Strider, you find yourself in the Pinnacle Tower after having been invited by a friend. It is uncomfortable. It is hot in this rented tux. You have been disrespected multiple times. Now I need Steve, the villain, to tell me what the threat is that John Strider, a.k.a. Jaunt?
Yes.
Faces.
One might not expect this timing-wise, because it's almost a 0% chance of this happening, unless this is a comic book, in which case there is a 100%
correct.
Chance of this happening.
Yes.
It turns out the Pinnacle Tower, because it was built one of the premier buildings in its time, the basement of that building is actually used for storage of... It used to be like high-priced objects.
Sure, like antiques, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but has since we moved a little bit further into the data age, it actually is an off-site storage facility for companies' data.
Uh-huh.
So there's basically these racks and racks of hard drives there that just store all different kinds of companies, major companies' data.
Love that.
I'm thinking that... God. Because there's a big, huge party, that's kind of a good distraction. You can have all these people that will generally not be allowed in the building that are there now because there's an event, that there's going to be a break-in and somebody's going to try to steal some specific data from these...
Steve, I hate this so much, which means it's so good.
That
this,
I love
like,
that.
Beautiful,
a heist, yeah.
Well, and that this beautiful historic building is now like just where the wealthy hang out and where capitalism has literally been like... Hey, this used to be cool, but like, let's store people's fucking ripped data in here. Great. Again, perfect choice.
It's easier to temperature control something that is underground and the basement of a large building. It has to have a good foundation. And
again,
be pretty far down there.
A businessman bought the whole thing and has slowly been just trying to like level by level maximize profit at every single turn. And like, no one wants a penthouse in the basement, but like, people will pay to just like, cram as many computers in as humanly possible.
And so there are some little bits of artwork and some of the stuff of that kind of thing that's stored in there for safekeeping, but most of it is for data.
So the way this is going to work is that the villain is going to roll a set of dice. And the number of dice that he's going to roll depends on if John is comfortable here, if he's not, or if he is just kind of neutral. We've already determined that Pinnacle Tower is not the best place for John Stryker.
Very bad.
Yeah, he's not a big fan. So, Steve, you are only going to roll one dice. And you're going to tell me what it is. And that will determine how John kind of comes out of this situation or and what he does.
Okay. Three.
Okay, so a three. John Strider, you managed to stop the threat, but it's messy. How do you stop the threat? What goes wrong along the way? Either way, you either take an injury or you cause collateral damage. So you do manage to win, you save the day, you stop the people from getting stolen from. But it's not great.
Okay, so I'm imagining we're at the top level of this skyscraper.
Yeah. Yep.
And this crime is happening at the bottom of the skyscraper.
Yeah.
To me, that seems like it is later on in the evening.
Uh-huh.
I have been absolutely emotionally drained just existing in this space, and I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Straight up's like, all right, I've been here long enough that I will not embarrass my friend. I will also not offend my friend for inviting me, but I'm going now.
Yeah.
And if I leave now, there's still like a couple hours of patrol that I could be doing. So I have to head out. And I think that John hits the wrong button on the elevator.
Oh, no.
Where, you know, where it's like, oh, there's ground level. And also there's a lobby. And also there's like lower level parking. And there's also like whatever. And he just hits the wrong button. And it opens up down there. And as he realizes, like, oh, I didn't. This is, oh, what? Uh-huh. What's happening? But he just like notices that there's like some activity. And something in his hero instinct pushes him to just check things out.
Sure.
Might I suggest, like, perhaps the sound of a drill? Something drilling.
Uh-huh. Great idea. Yeah, exactly. Something where it's like, it doesn't seem quite right.
Yeah.
John's not a great actor, but he knows I can pretend to be like drunk or whatever.
Sure.
And be like, oh, oops, whatever. And so he comes upon it and very obviously sees the goon.
Yeah.
The prototypical goons of the superhero world. He managed to kind of like sneak up enough that he is able to like put on his domino mask or whatever.
Yeah.
That obscures his face perfectly so that no one ever knows who he is. But he is still wearing his shitty rented tux. A fight ensues. It's pretty straightforward. When you have someone who can teleport and they are taking you by surprise, you can really get some good punches in pretty quick.
Yeah.
And John is not naturally strong, but has worked hard to somewhat capable.
Right.
I'm imagining maybe even just has a billy club kind of thing where he's like, he's just like, I need an extra edge.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he manages to mostly subdue these criminals. But in the course of doing so, I'm thinking either there is a big electrical failure.
Uh-huh.
Because like, A, not just like this requires a ton of energy for just this, but like this whole building requires a ton of energy and could mess up the grid of the whole city. Or it's also people's data. And so like maybe he interrupts them at a certain point in the transfer or obtaining of data.
Yes.
And instead of like shutting down the feed or taking out the, I don't know, the dongle, right, that they're using to hack in.
You didn't go to like left click eject.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like did something along those lines where it's like, this is, I don't know how, this, I'm just a guy.
Yes.
My scientific background is teleportation, which has very little to do with data hacking.
Uh-huh.
So he does something wrong and some of the data is no longer encrypted.
Sure.
And you know, maybe they don't figure it out right then.
Yeah.
Maybe it's later on. It just makes it easier for other hackers to figure out or something. But I would say one of those two things seems to make sense.
You stopped this particular goon from getting everything, but there is a portion of it that is now easier to get, or like some part of it was absconded with.
Exactly. Like he stopped this, but still like didn't do it right.
Yeah.
And so therefore it was weaker. It was in the future.
Right. So some collateral damage, and the party is ruined too with the power failure. I mean, you're going to hear about it on the news the next day about how there was this big gathering and all of a sudden the power went out to everyone. They're going to be looking for whatever caused this. And they might find some tracks leading to a certain John Strider. We'll see. Who knows?
Or perhaps a tag of the rental agency.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. John is very, in fact, very mechanically good at leaving no tracks.
Right. Exactly.
Traces, however.
I was going to say, it depends on how we want to describe it. The smell of sulfur in the air. Yeah. Weird.
It teleports to hell and then back to... You know,
whatever.
So we'll go ahead and move on to the next scene. And that means I'm going to draw a card. Okay, interesting. So we have a Jack of Hearts. And the Jack of Hearts, by virtue of being a Jack, means that we find ourselves somewhere peaceful. And by virtue of being a heart, means that you find yourself in a fairly neutral place. This is not a place that you are super comfortable in, but it's not nearly as bad as the Pinnacle Tower. It's just kind of a part of the city that, you know, you find yourself in. It is a place that you are able to quietly recover and focus your attention on someone specific. I'm imagining it is one of the biggest art museums in the city.
Okay.
Like the Metropolitan kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Of like, it is still one of the last functioning museums in the city after the whole city has kind of like gone downhill. This place still gets a good amount of public funding and they still get a decent number of visitors.
Yeah, they have endowment they can just kind of keep, it keeps running itself for however long.
It's a big reason why people even come to the city in the first place is because of the art museum.
It could just be like the Bastion Art Museum, Bastion of Art.
Absolutely. Okay, so it's the Bastion of Art. Wow, look at that. John, you find yourself with some time to contemplate. But not all is well with the world, as the villain is still out there doing something. Steve, I want you to describe the threat outside as it continues to build. So the world does not stop, although John is trying to relax. Tell me about what else is happening out there in the broader city as John is here contemplating.
We have a separate panel, somewhere different, maybe a federal building, some kind of military operation. And there's a bunch of people kind of coming and going. And someone approaches one of the, looks like a higher ranking military officer, and just says, "Sir, we have a problem." "What is it now?" "We've lost contact with three of our satellites." "Which ones?" "Sir, it's the experimental one, sir." And then there's just kind of that face drop.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the fact that they didn't have to name them, they just had to call them the experimental ones.
Yeah. Yeah. They knew.
"For Project Y, sir." X was too widely used. And
it goes beyond Project X.
This is the successor to Project X, Project Y. And that leads to essentially another whole bunch of comic book panels of people rushing around and trying to regain contact with these three satellites that they have lost contact with.
Very cool. Very cool. Love that. So, John, you find yourself in the Bastion of Art. On this particular day, you come across a friend. Someone you've known for a while now. And someone who needs you to listen to them. You're going to run into an ex.
Absolutely.
So you used to date someone who works here. It's always a little tense whenever you come to the museum because on the one hand, it's your happy place in some ways. You're familiar with the area. But on the other hand, Cindy is here.
Yep.
Cindy is one of the curators. She's usually giving tours during the day to various groups. She actually specifically works with children. The two of you had a brief but exciting in those days relationship. As you are browsing the museum, you hear a behind you. You recognize it immediately as Cindy. "John, is that you? I didn't see you over there."
I was just enjoying this art. Look, I know what I'm about to say sounds like I'm making it up, but you have to believe that I wasn't here to see you.
Upon looking at her, you can tell immediately that she is worried about something. She's fidgeting, she's looking away from you. It's written all over her that she's got something on her mind and that she needs your help with something.
I think John would be super awkward for an entire conversation.
And it would be that awkward of like, I don't know how to end this.
Yeah.
I feel like you want or need something from me, but I don't know how to say it, whatever. And so like, we just talk for like 2 or 3 full minutes.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's awkward.
Painful.
It
yeah.
sucks. Someone comes down the hallway and is like, I don't want to walk past that, and turns around because yeah. it is so like uninviting. It gets to the point where they say their awkward goodbyes.
Yeah.
Kind of like, oh, how you been? Well, you know, whatever. Before John would gather the courage, once she's no longer looking at him, uh-huh. essentially, to just be like, hey, are you sure everything's okay? I don't know. It's just something.
So as part of that conversation, too, you actually open up a little bit of a line of communication. Things didn't end so well between the two of you, but now...
Because I was phenomenally busy, sleep-deprived, yeah. and depressed.
But now, kind of coming into this space, you actually realize that what she's really concerned about is how you will feel seeing her again. This is kind of like the first little bit of reconstruction of your relationship. And she's taking that first step to be like, you know, John, it's been a while since we've seen each other. And like, I do have to get going soon. Like, the kids are waiting for me. But, you know, maybe we could get a drink sometime if you're not busy. I know you're always busy these days. But it's just, it'd be nice to catch up.
You have my number or whatever. I am busy. And I don't, you know, there's always something going on. But if you want, we can. Yeah, sure.
Okay, thanks, John. That'd be nice. She runs off to finish her tour, but something kind of comes back. The connection is made once again as you spend your day browsing the art.
He leaves immediately after that. He has. I feel like the art museum is a place where he goes to kind of like center himself and like think about things and just be outside of his brain for a little while. Yeah. So he's been here for like 45 minutes and he paid $50 yes. that he doesn't really have to get in. He is a member maybe, but either way, he does not enjoy his nice full afternoon of art that he was hoping to. He leaves immediately afterwards.
Perfect. You now have an ally, quote unquote. And there's a couple of different ways that allies can help you overcome the threats in the city. You can do one of two things with an ally. So you met Cindy, your old ex, who is trying to reconnect with you. If the villain rolls a 1 for your attempt to overcome a threat that matches the suit of an ally, in this case, Cindy's a heart, you can treat the result as a 4 or a 5 as they come to your aid. So if Steve, our villain here, rolls a 1, you can say, nope, Cindy's going to help me in some way, and we can change that roll to a 4 or 5. Or if there's a person in power opposing your efforts whose suit matches your ally's, you may choose to sacrifice that ally in order to take down that person in power. As we get further into the game, you may find someone.
Wow, everything just got dark.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
Nathan chooses to sacrifice as opposed to John chooses. To, I mean, it could be both, but sure, it's not necessarily. John's like, yeah, fuck Cindy.
Well, you're going to have to tell me why.
Sure. But
And to clarify, is it like sacrifice the person or is it like sacrifice your relationship with the person to have this happen?
However you want to.
We'll get to it.
Yep.
Okay. So not necessarily alter, like strap down.
Yeah. The boat doesn't explode.
Wiggly flame knife.
Yep. Yeah. Right. But keep an eye out. Cindy's got her eye on you, maybe once again. So we're going to get to one more scene. And this particular one, the 3 of Diamonds. So once again, somewhere in imminent danger, John Strider is needed in Bastion City. This is a diamond. Mm-hmm.
So I am a diamond. So that would be somewhere I'm familiar with, presumably.
This is somewhere you are...
And comfortable.
Yep. This is your neighborhood. These are your people.
It's Lions Park, baby.
Yeah.
That's where we're in the namesake, the Lions Park.
Absolutely. Something bad is happening here, but people are looking to you for inspiration. I'm imagining there's... I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but there's a laundromat that you go to all the time.
Perfect.
People know your name there. the owners give you free washes all the time because you've helped fix their plumbing or something.
It's free. Well, it's free dries.
Okay, free dries. Yeah,
it's not because it's like you don't want to let them air dry for free. Sure. Like you still pay for the wash.
Okay,
but
fair. Yes,
free dries.
Yes, absolutely. And you've got a rapport with the owner of this laundromat.
I'm writing down a list of like the places we've been, and it's like Pinnacle Tower, Bastion of Art Museum, Laundromat.
Yeah.
Which is very appropriate for John, to be clear. But
I really want it to be called Suds and Stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say it has to be something like
Suds
that.
Suds and Stuff.
To be clear, it is apostrophe N apostrophe stuff.
Yes. His name's Al.
Yep, of course.
He's an immigrant.
And his whole family is often around.
Yes. And you just got a bunch of little kids running around the laundromat as people are trying to do their laundry. Al is here once again. Just keep an eye on things, making sure everything's running well. And you yourself are here, too, on your usual laundry run. The villain arrives.
Crime really goes unchecked every Tuesday night in Lions Park, and it's because I am doing my laundry.
Yeah. No, and I also am kind of picturing this awkward moment where John drops something and one of the kids runs up and like picks it up to hand it back and it's like part of his super suit and it's like the mask or something and he's just like, there's this moment where they just kind of like lock eyes
it's like huh?
Tell anyone I'll kill you, child. I'll teleport you to the top of the Pinnacle Tower and let go.
Real tone shift over here.
Not if you can't see it, mister.
Very gritty.
Well, I need the villain to tell me about the threat that happens while John's at the laundromat in Lions Park. And it doesn't have to be in the laundromat specifically, but just somewhere in
his the area.
His neighborhood, yeah.
This is a few weeks, at least, the break-in at Pinnacle Tower. And probably maybe a week after your encounter with Cindy. But it is kind of a cloudy day in New Bastion, and there seems to be some kind of, not necessarily storm clouds, but relatively thick clouds over the city. From outside, you actually see everything kind of takes on a red tint. It starts off maybe a little bit pink, and everybody's like, ooh, look, it's kind of pretty, and then it gets deeper and darker crimson.
Oh, no.
And then a beam of some kind strikes 5 blocks away from you. A beam of red pierces through the clouds, hits the ground, and then starts moving across the city, probably with a 100% chance of headed towards the laundromat.
Also, I love that in this game, I don't know anything about the villain yet.
No.
Which is very cool. Like, you could have not. You could have had, like, the classic Incredibles introduction of the Underminer, where he just, like, comes up in the middle of the city and starts screaming his own name.
I'm the Underminer.
And here's my motivation and intense backstory.
Right.
But in this one, it's not. What is also very funny about this is very specific. It's like, no, I'm a street level neighborhood guy. I can teleport and then I have like a stick.
Yeah.
And that's my vibe. And it's like, ha ha, lasers of death.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Wow. Okay. How will John save Lions Park from the giant laser of death that is coming to destroy his favorite laundromat with Al and his children inside?
I teleport to space, first of all.
Great.
I can see space.
Take a deep breath first.
Uh-huh. Yes. Or don't. No,
or
you don't.
Don't.
You
let all the air.
Exactly.
So, Steve, you are going to roll 3 dice because John Strider, a.k.a. Jaunt, is in his element here. He's comfortable here.
It's kind of why I wanted to go big.
Yeah. So, you're going to roll 3 dice. And you're going to tell me the highest result.
Highest result. Got it. A 2, a 2, and a 6.
Hey. Okay. Okay, cool. Okay, this is pretty good.
For who?
Yeah. Well, so this is a big threat. And on a 6, the result is that you push yourself past your limits and become something greater than yourself. How do you inspire the people?
Okay. I think this is still pretty early in John's time as the Jaunt. He knew that if he just, like, went out, he'd be absolutely, he'd get stabbed immediately. And so his powers are still pretty limited.
Yeah.
He can teleport, but it's not super duper far. He can kind of do it with some amount of speed now, you know, kind of one after the other. But again, it's not like an instant, just bap, 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 bap.
Yeah.
And also, he's not been able to, like, bring anyone with him.
Sure, yeah.
and hasn't wanted to try because like you don't want to get that wrong.
Right.
He's been like, cool, I guess I'll try to this, you know, he's like
with an apple or something.
Right, exactly. He's been like working himself up to be like, I will hold this mouse in my hand, but even then he's like, I can't be responsible for another death. And this mouse was too cute, and now it just lives in my apartment with me. So in this moment, this like huge beam comes down, and he immediately is like, I am so out of my depth, so not sure what's happening. Yeah. This could be a literal like alien invasion for all he knows. Uh-huh. And the only thing that he is sure of is that A, big laser seems bad. And B, boy, that laser sure is coming straight for this laundromat and Al and all of his beautiful children. Yeah. And so I think he is going to, while everyone's a little bit distracted, do the classic Clark Kent. Actually, no. He actually teleports out of his clothes instead of taking them off. So he just like teleports a foot to the side of his clothing.
Okay.
So he is still wearing his second lightly shittier laundry day superhero outfit underneath because the other one's in the wash.
Yep.
So he teleports out of it and is now in his uniform.
I'm just imagining the jogging pants just like.
Yeah, absolutely. Just boom, right onto the ground. He goes straight to Al and his kids and anyone else who might be in here and manages to get them together.
Okay.
And specifically, he is like very forceful about it or like very commanding about it in a way that is not John at all.
Yes.
Because he's just it is so life or death. This has to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets them all together and he like turns to like move them out the back door to this place, but sees out the big like front windows that it is now
right on
pushing
top of them,
down on the, and there's no way.
Yeah.
And so just in this fear, instinct, adrenaline rush, without even thinking, it's like a defense mechanism, fight or flight kind of thing. His teleportation field expands and just like winks the whole family out of existence.
Yeah.
And deposits them into the actual like park of Lions Park. There's that moment where he's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I did it. I don't know how I did it. Okay. And he looks back and like two blocks away is again, still, I presume, giant laser, just like. And so he just spends however long this laser happens, just teleporting from like building to building.
Yes.
Like, and he is just trying to churn through as many as he can, try to find people quickly. And luckily it's maybe the middle of the day, so people are like at work or whatever, and at school and that kind of thing. He not only shows up for a lot of people who are there, but specifically does it in a way that is, I won't say fully confident, because that's not really John, but in a commanding kind of way.
Yes.
And they like, he is a little bit in control in this horrific situation and kind of builds that little bit of reputation.
I would like to offer one suggestion.
Definitely.
Your first teleport from the laundromat with the group, the first time it kind of expands out, I would love it if in the park you saw a circle of the tile from the laundromat.
Oh, yeah.
And also like parts of like a dryer or a washer.
I'll have to work on that as we go.
Yeah, so you get better as you go. But like that first one is like the everything in a 10
the fine motor control isn't quite there yet. Absolutely.
Well, Al's like, I'm so happy you saved me and my kids, but you also took the tile with me. It's like, you got to pay for that.
But also technically, I have saved some of his laundromat.
Yeah, exactly.
As that is being absolutely decimated.
Because that's right when he turns around and the laser just obliterates the entire thing.
Yeah. Yes. Nathan, a.k.a. John Strider, a.k.a. Jaunt, you're going to take this three of diamonds. This is now your renown.
Ooh, okay.
You have saved someone, specifically Al and his family, even though the laundromat is unfortunately dead.
Oh, can I ask?
Yeah.
Would I get the impression of this laser following me versus just cutting a path through the neighborhood, I guess?
I'll ask Steve, our villain, that.
For right now, I am picturing the villain as basically intent on destroying the city.
Mm-hmm.
So this seems to be a random test, let's say.
Yeah, in a part of town that isn't going to impact as many people, or like...
In a part of town where everybody will have seen this happen, and then the villain can go back and say, look, do this for me, or next time... This goes to a different area.
Pinnacle Tower gets hit.
Yes.
Yeah. So for our next scene, I've drawn the King of Diamonds. For the king, we are located somewhere protected. And just looking at the description here, it says, there are places in this city that ordinary people will never go. Places far removed from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. These are the halls of the rich and powerful, those with money and the influence to change the world and who choose not to. These people are not your friend, hero. I have also, because I've drawn the King of Diamonds, the person that we encounter here is someone with great wealth and status. We find ourselves in a place that is opulent, decorated with obvious displays of wealth and luxury. Steve, I need you to tell me who this person is. Who is the person that lives here somewhere protected that the hero cannot get to? And how are they made aware of your existence?
I'm actually going to say this is the mayor's house.
Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is our first glimpse of the villain too, or a villain. This is the first time that we see someone in direct conflict with our hero, John Strider. So the mayor of New Bastion is here living a life of luxury.
I'm going to say that John's friend, whoever it was that invited him to the big soiree at the Pinnacle Tower.
Yeah, yeah.
Contacts him again because he knows he does some kind of scientific research but doesn't know exactly what. And says, I just got a preliminary report on the first of all, calling to make sure you're okay. But I got some kind of preliminary report on the types of data that were stolen during the break-in at the tower during the party. And it has to do with funds for building some kind of complex.
Project Y just keeps coming over and over. It's so weird.
Yeah. Using parts of the city property to build some kind of underground complex. Okay. And the funds that were being shifted from things like neighborhood renovations and new building projects are suddenly being funded into this other Y category.
The mysterious Y.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of wondering if you had heard anything in your sector, because I knew you deal with the experimental tech, or if you have any indications of all of a sudden, like certain areas having an influx of money that are now getting funded more than they had been in the past.
So I think John has continued to, like, I think he's still tangentially involved a little bit in like a scientific way. Again, he was like, the setup he was in was not like the most professional or safe or whatever. So he, in addition to crippling guilt, is not really like looked upon super favorably in the scientific community, but like has a couple of friends and whatever who's like willing to talk to him every once in a while.
And I imagine he still stays there because he's still somewhat trying to figure out what happened to him.
For sure, yeah. So John would, you know, like to his friend would be like, oh, I have no clue. Haven't heard anything. I could like ask a couple of people, or like, I'd prefer like, if I don't give you their names, I'll just check or whatever and I can get back to you. But at minimum, it definitely starts to kind of like ring a bell, I guess. Okay. Or at least starts to interest him a little bit. He never really heard anything about a big project that got started in the first place, but he also only pays a little bit of attention to the news. He's neighborhood level. He's not city level. That's too much.
Uh-huh.
But he's going to start kind of looking into it, or at least kind of like be made aware of what's happening.
One of the locations for one of these complexes happened to get hit with a giant beam from the sky, you know, a matter of days ago.
Very cool.
Okay. So it's all coming back together. But Steve, you mentioned that as part of these investigations, some of this data seems to point back towards the mayor. Very, very interesting.
And the reason the mayor is somewhat untouchable, well, not only because they're the mayor, but also very publicly, they have been trying to gather funds for renovations on low-income neighborhoods.
Yes.
And so a lot of these neighborhoods that they're talking about, the mayor has been very forward with, we need to infrastructure to go back.
Yes.
So publicly, the mayor is a very well-liked person.
I see.
Okay. So he's like a real champion of the, like, make New Bastion great again.
Yeah.
kind of vibe.
But without the connotations of that particular phrase.
Yeah. Correct.
So you have your first visible enemy, John Strider, and enemies represent long-term antagonists who repeatedly oppose the hero's efforts to help the city. After our mayor friend is introduced, every time the villain rolls to see if you stop a threat, if the card matches the suit of the enemy, they will appear and block the hero's progress. So the villain will show up every so often to make things harder on you. And this continues until you either obtain the enemy's weakness, which will be represented by an ace, or an ally of the same suit sacrifices themselves to stop the enemy.
What suit is the mayor?
Diamond.
Diamond.
I'm Diamond.
Yes, so when we find ourselves in a Diamond location, the villain also appears.
He is not necessarily like the, like, right. not the yeah. Steve, but yeah. he is like an antagonist.
Right.
Slash ally, slash whatever.
Lieutenant.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Just someone in a position of power who makes your life miserable.
Yep.
So we've played through four scenes in this game. Anyone can wear the mask. I think we're going to stop it right here, and we'll continue in part two to figure out what happens to John Strider, how he ultimately saves the day, but what kinds of tragic, terrible things happen to him as we take this story to its final conclusion.
I don't know. I feel like now is a good place to stop, not just for the episode, but the whole thing. Like, he just he saved people from a giant laser.
That's true.
He learned
that's
a lot about himself. Then, he started to reconnect with his ex. Right? I think this seems
And then the
about
mayor
right.
just starts twirling his mustache in the back in his luscious palace, just like, John Strider.
Yes. I'll get you, John Strider. That's the last thing I do.
Yes. Thank you again, patrons, and we will see you all next time on Reckless Adjacent. Thank you again for all of your support, and we will see you all next time.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.